You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
On this 25th day of 2018, a Thursday, we're talking Cubs baseball today with Kerry Muscat, our Cubs reporter for MLB.com. Kerry, thank you so much for the time, and the rumors continue to swirl about the Cubs possibly getting their hands on the coveted free agent right-hander Yu Darvish. The Cubs made a rather under-the-radar signing to Chris Gimenez to a minor league deal, but there might be some dots to connect there between him and Darvish. We'll touch on that at the end of the podcast, but I want to begin by talking about the Hall of Fame vote, which came down on Wednesday night, and four players voted by the BBWAA. Unfortunately, among that list, or I should say not among that list, were Kerry Wood and Carlos Zambrano, as they did not receive the requisite 5% of the votes, and they have thus fallen off the ballot. And that's, you know, obviously nobody's going to sit here and say that these guys were Hall of Famers, but to see them fall off the ballot, always a tough thing, especially in the case of Kerry Wood, a guy that, you know, for one year, his rookie year, it looked like he was going to be one day enshrined in Cooperstown. Of course, that did not turn out to be the case. But Kerry, I kind of want to use this as an excuse to talk about what is, by many metrics, at least on baseballreference.com, the greatest nine-inning game ever pitched in baseball history. Again, according to the game score metric on Baseball Reference, that took place back in May of 1998, 20 years ago, when Kerry Wood was only 20 years young. The complete game, one hitter, 20 strikeouts of the Houston Astros. Again, the game score of 105, unmatched amongst nine-inning games in baseball history. Give us your memories of that unforgettable day at Wrigley Field.
Well, I do know that Kerry Wood was happiest because he did not walk a batter in that game. And I think that was he was actually more excited about that than the fact that that he struck out 20. It was, I was not, MLB.com did not exist at that point, so I was actually a stringer for the Associated Press, and with each strikeout, and as the game continued, then I kept getting calls from my bosses in New York and also some other publications that I worked for, such as USA Today, because I was freelancing, and they all wanted to know, can you do a story if he does this? So it was a little crazy personally for me. I tell people it's my favorite game of all time, and it's the best game I've ever seen anybody throw. And I've seen no hitters, so this was just above and beyond. The cool thing was they had fans in the bleachers in left field had these K cards, and that was the first time we'd seen them at Wrigley. And it turns out a teacher had brought them to the ballpark. He'd kind of skipped class, I think, with his kids, and they just happened to have those K cards out there. And he said they almost ran out, which I thought was kind of funny because they obviously no one anticipates 20 strikeouts. But Woody had so much, there was so much hype surrounding his arrival, and if you look at his starts that year, his first big league start, he'd only gone 4 2/3. His next start, 5 innings. His third start, 1 2/3, and he was shelled. And then all of a sudden, in his fifth start on May 6th, you know, everything clicked, and it was really masterful. I know I've talked to Kevin Ory, who was the third baseman. The one hit that happened went past him, and he keeps thinking there was some controversy. You know, should have been an error, should have been a hit. The nice thing is the guy who was the official scorer is still a scorer at Wrigley Field, and he said that he has talked to Woody and he's talked to Ori, and they both agreed that it was fine as a hit. It should not have been an error. And it was, in fact, I think it was just last year where the score and Wood had a chance to chat about it, but it was dominating. And yes, you did think that this was a sign of great things to come. And then Woody missed all of 1999 when he had to have Tommy John surgery. And he sort of came back and reinvented himself a little bit. He was a closer for the Cubs in 2008 and 2009. And if that was my favorite game, my second favorite Kerry Wood game was his last outing when he knew that that was going to be it. It was in May in 2012, and he knew that was it. And he only faced one batter, struck out the batter, and as he's coming off the field, his son came running out of the dugout to meet him, and the Cubs had kind of arranged that. And it was just a major Kodak moment right there, you know, and it was, I don't think there were too many dry eyes in the place, and it was nice. He's still very involved in Chicago. He has a Wood Family Foundation. They're really active in terms of helping schools, and anybody who wants to help him help out, it's a great cause. They named a kids field at a high school, Lane Tech High School, after Wood, and that was kind of nice. That was something he wanted to do too. So he's still active in Chicago, and he may not have made it to Cooperstown, but as far as Cubs are concerned, he's a Hall of Famer in their hearts.
No question. Still so wildly revered and popular in Chicago amongst the Cubs fan base, and like you said, it's really amazing. You know, he accomplished this incredible game as a kid himself at just 20, and then his last appearance with the Cubs, his own kid, runs onto the field. It's, like you said, Kodak moment, no dry eyes, and all the rest of it, certainly. One more point about that game in particular. From what you recall, did he start off on a torrid strikeout pace where, like, you know, did he get the side in the first couple innings to make you think, hey, he's got a shot at Clemens here? Or was it more of a case of, you know, modest strikeout numbers at first, and then he kind of picked up steam as the game went on? How did that unfold?
I'm pretty sure he struck out the side at the start. It's not really until you get to double digits that you kind of start thinking. You don't, you know, if the guy strikes out three batters, you're not going to think anything like
right.
that. When he starts, if he starts getting to double digits and you see how he's cruising along, you might think, okay, this is not going to work. Okay, I'm looking at the play-by-play. He did strike out the first three batters he faced, so I probably should have been paying a little better attention that way. And then he struck out five of the first six batters he faced.
There we go.
Gutierrez got the one hit in the top of the third. So I think once Gutierrez got the hit, if you're covering it, you sort of take a deep breath and think, okay, we don't have to worry about a no-hitter here. But it was impressive. And I was just watching. They had someone posted on Twitter a little YouTube condensed version of the game, and watching that and just watching all the strikeouts, to see the looks on the Astros' faces, it's Moises Alou and those guys, they were just couldn't figure him out. And it was nice to me that he ended the game with a strikeout,
yeah.
You know, getting Derek Bell swinging and boom, that was it. So it was a good way to end.
Yeah, and if I recall it, it was just a nasty, disgusting breaking ball for his final pitch, and he had that little fist pump, and he knew he'd done something special, and boy, the crowd knew it too.
Actually, you say that, but he didn't.
He didn't what?
No, he didn't know he had 20 strikeouts.
Oh, he didn't know?
No.
Oh, wow.
No, he didn't know. No, he was more, like I said, he was happier about that outing that he did because he did not walk a batter.
Wow.
That was what he was happy about. Mm. Pitchers aren't sitting there counting. He knew he had a lot, but he did not. No, I've talked to him many times. We did a children's book together,
mm-hmm.
you know, and talked about that. No, he was not paying attention at all to the strikeout.
Wow.
He was happy that he did not walk a batter.
That's incredible. And then, oh, by the way, you've tied an all-time big league record. I mean, That's just amazing. What an amazing footnote to an amazing day at Wrigley Field, and I'm sure something that's going to be commemorated and celebrated just a few short months from now, the 20th anniversary of that incredible game. Well, Kerry, as we come down the home stretch here, you're one of 13 MLB.com team reporters to have a Hall of Fame vote. Six players on your ballot for 2018. As you voted three of the four that did make it, your only exclusion was Trevor Hoffman. Also on your ballot, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. Also, Omar Vizquel. Kind of take us through your thought process on how you filled out your ballot this year.
With Chipper and Jim Thome, it wasn't too hard. They were no-brainers to me. I did have to do a little more, looked at Vlad's stats a little more, and felt I should have voted for him the first time he was on the ballot. But sometimes it's a matter of just kind of, I don't want to say I don't do the homework the first time, but sometimes it's just when you look at it a second time, you sort of look at a player's numbers a little differently and talking to people look at it differently. I've been voting for Bonds and Clemens every time but once that they've been on the ballot. I realize that there are a lot of people who don't agree. I feel my responsibility is just to judge the players in terms of the context of their era and vote for the best players. And I know that in talking to Jim Riggleman when he was the Cubs manager, he said that Bonds would keep him up at night. And he was always looking at a game. He was always kind of planning ahead as to try and make sure that no one was on base when Bonds came up. Vizquel, I was surprised his vote totals were so low. I know there's been this surge of sabermetrics and people say, oh, he was terrible. All I know is the man was just so acrobatic and so gifted, and there was never a game that he played that he did not make some kind of, oh my gosh, take your breath away type play out in shortstop. And I just, he was just a joy to watch. And watching him and Robbie Alomar together was even better. But I will continue to support Vizquel. I sometimes think defense doesn't get enough recognition.
Yeah, unfortunately, that does seem to be the case with a number of players. I just talked to your counterpart, Mark Sheldon, the Reds reporter, and he had the same argument about Scott Rolen, another defensive wizard at third base, and he got very scant support at just 10%. Omar was in the high 30s, if I recall, and Clemens and Bonds in the mid to high 50s. So we'll see if their numbers continue to trend in coming years, but 2018 at least is not going to be their year. Kerry, to wrap things up here, as we touched on at the top of the podcast, the Cubs and Yu Darvish continue to flirt, if you will. And the Cubs made a signing that at first glance doesn't appear to be a big deal, but if you look a little bit deeper, it may be a big deal, as they signed veteran catcher Chris Giménez to a minor league deal. Now, Giménez and Darvish have experience as a tandem working together as Ranger teammates back in 2014. A dozen starts as the two were battery mates, and a 3.29 ERA in those dozen starts. So Darvish works well with him. You know, is there anything to this? Did the Cubs make this signing kind of wishing or hoping that it might sway Darvish a little bit in the end? What do you think here?
Well, if you look at the Cubs depth chart, the only catchers they have right now are Wilson Contreras and Victor Caratini. And then they have a couple of young kids in the minors. So what they really need is a veteran backstop. Now, unless, you know, I'm guessing that they would rather have Caratini catching on a regular basis in the minors, even though I think Caratini has done well, did well when they called him up and was a backup. I think people are reading way too much into the signing and the Darvish connection. You could also look, Giménez also was a catcher in the Rays organization, which means that Joe Maddon and Jim Hickey know him from those days.
Yep.
And he also worked with Alex Cobb. So you could say, well, they signed him because they want to get Alex Cobb. There's all sorts of connections. I think the bottom line is that the Cubs needed a veteran backup catcher. There's no guarantee that he's even going to make the squad, you know, because they could decide that they're happy with Contreras and Caratini and put Giménez down at, you know, someplace else. So I just find that the stories that suddenly made it seem as if the Cubs were going to sign Darvish automatically just because they had his catcher, I think that's a little far-fetched. The Cubs have made an offer to Darvish. It's really, the ball's in Darvish's court. It's up to him to make a decision, and it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, and I mean, the Cubs are in on him. The Brewers, we've heard the Twins, the Dodgers might want him back. Heck, the Rangers might want him back. So it's five or six teams in this race. The Cubs are right there, and maybe by this time next week, we're talking about Yu Darvish, a Chicago Cub. But as always, time will tell. Kerry, our time is up for this week. We thank you so much for the time. Kerry Muscat, our Cubs reporter, joining us today. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras Chicago Cubs.